welcome to Quality of Life Radio, hosted by Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazines.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Quality of Life show with Nancy and Lisa. Today, we welcome Dr. Jean Kenokogi. She is the daughter of Rena, who's known as Rusty Kenokogi, who is known really as the mother of women's judo. You know what? This is so cool. We love mother-daughter stories. And this is, Nancy, this is the kick-ass mother-daughter story, don't you think? Yeah. Are we allowed to say that? We have to be careful because Jean is a special agent for the U.S. government. She's not only a special agent, she's a senior special agent, so you never know. But Jean is a fifth degree black belt in judo and is also a sensei. Joining us today to talk about her mom's memoir that she co-wrote with her, it's called Get Up and Fight, the memoir of Rena Rusty Kenokogi, the mother of women's judo. You can get it now, and I encourage you to go to their website, RustyKenokogi.com, and that's K-A-N-O-K-O-G-I, RustyKenokogi.com. So welcome to the show, Jean. How are you?
Great. Thanks so much for having me. I love the mother and daughter team.
Thank you. I know you know about that as well. I mean, I don't think you can be as real with anybody as much as with your mom and your mom with a daughter, and it can be really good or it can really kick you in the butt.
Well, I had both. It was really good, and she kicked my butt a lot. Where else can you proudly say that your mother choked you at least 3 times a week regularly?
Wow. No way. See, this is crazy. That's crazy. But then people would think, no way. Then people always talk to Nancy and I, like, how do you travel and work and play together? Yeah. I'm like, it's not all roses. You're going to have your time. You know, you're going to have your moment where we have to like deliberate. But you got to choke each other out. I actually want to back up on all of it though and talk about judo. So, you know, I was talking about you coming on a show to a couple of friends and like, okay, which one is judo? So let's talk about judo because it is also a very good practice for focus and meditation, right? And also strength. And there's just so much about it. So can we start with what judo is?
Sure. Judo is actually the gentle way. Believe it or not, it's broken down, even though we throw each other through the mat. It's really the gentle way. You use your opponent's movements in the direction that they want to move, and you just help them move along a little bit faster and a little bit closer to the ground.
So and judo then you choke them.
Yeah, that too. Well, judo consists of multiple throws, chokes, arm locks, and pins. So you can throw somebody and score a full point, you would win the match. And then there's different breakdowns of less than a full point. And same thing with pins, you have to pin them for X amount of seconds and you can win by a full point. But if you pin them for a certain amount of time and they escape, you still can get a point depending on the time. The arm locks, you can actually put an arm bar or an arm lock on somebody. And there's two ways to win by a full point with that. Either they give up or their arm gives out. It's easier to try to get out of it. But, you know, we've seen that in the professional wrestling, in the PFL and the MMA with Ronda Rousey and Kayla Harrison, who are arm bar magnificence. They do amazing arm bars. So that's an example of what a judo arm bar looks like. And with the chokes, there's two ways. There's chokes where it's not like you come in and you just do a strangle on somebody and just shake them. There's actual judo techniques that are chokes. And these chokes, either the person submits and taps out or they go out. So those are two ways to win. So even though it's called the gentle way, there is a lot of philosophy with judo, and we'll talk about that later on how Rusty applied the philosophy and how I lived the philosophy. One of them is jitsu kyoe, which is the mutual benefit for all. So that's why we bow to each other in judo. We bow, we look down, and we really have respect for the mat, for the referees, and for our opponent, because our opponent is allowing us to become a better us. And that really crosses over into even resiliency, because it allows us to be a better us and allows the opponent to be a better them. The other philosophy is really just maximizing your effort. and involving all. It's oriented towards really gathering everybody on the same playing field. And that really speaks to diversity, inclusion, empowerment. And that's a lot of what judo brings. It brings a sense of belonging, a friendship. And you mentioned mindfulness earlier. Well, if your mind is not directly involved in what you're doing with your opponent, your mind is going to be looking up at the ceiling in about a moment because they're going to throw you. So you really, your mind, judo and most martial arts really promote mindfulness, and you don't even realize that you're doing it, and you're almost in a meditative state when you're practicing, because it's not just the physical practice of judo, but it's the mental practice of judo. You learn early on, even as a child, to visualize the techniques, because you can't ask your body to do something unless your mind is going there. And especially movements that are not customarily normal, like walking. Walking, most people, you don't have to think about it. It's just something automatic. But executing a throw like Harigoshi, you have to learn that. You have to learn how to twist, how to turn, how to pull your body. And then you learn where your body is physically located. So many people are not aware of their own body. Doesn't matter if you're big, if you're little, if you're coordinated, if you're athletic. Doesn't matter. So many people have zero recognition of where their body is. Oh, I didn't know I was doing that. How many times do you hear that in life? And judo actually makes you mindful of your own body, of where your foot actually is. Like, if you know, some people, they could stand and be exercising and not even know that a part of their body is their elbow is completely sticking out. When you play softball or baseball, some people don't realize that, you know, you have to tuck your arm and they're like, oh, I didn't know where my elbow is. Well, in judo, if you don't know where your elbow is, your opponent's certainly going to find it and arm lock you.
Oh, this kind of reminds me, Nancy and I used to teach music, musical organ. And people would go, oh, I can't carry a tune in the bucket. I'm like, well, here, I'll teach you three notes. You've played something, you know, and that's kind of that same thing. And it's, and I think we almost shut down ourselves about a gaining knowledge and applying it. We just go, no, there's like a negative, there's a neurological thing that we always have this negative before positive. And so I think that's what's interesting. I know so many friends who are involved in martial arts, and you think, oh, what, you just want to kill people, you want to just nail them, and they're like, no, it is actually taken in my life into this positive turn of mindfulness and understand. Yeah. And I know people who've gotten through addiction actually through martial arts, you know, so it's interesting about that positive side.
When I taught art, the first thing people said was, I can't draw a straight line. And I always said, well, I haven't asked you to do that. That's why we have rulers. You know, nobody asked you to draw a straight line as part of art. But that was always the thing.
And that's a great segue. I mean, just speaking, Lisa, to what you said, human beings are naturally negative on themselves. We're 80% negative, and we really have to shift that focus and really redirect our thinking to something a little bit more positive. And we are the least compassionate towards ourselves. We are so compassionate, so humanitarian towards other fellow human beings, but towards ourselves. You ever do something that, I don't know, put flour in your coffee instead of sugar, and what's the first thing you do is you self-deprecate. The first thing you do, you say, oh, you're such a, well, would you tell that to your friend who accidentally did that? No, we would be more compassionate to your friend. So we have to learn to be a little bit more compassionate towards ourselves. And Nancy, what you said as far as I can't draw a straight line, well, you know what? Neither did Jackson Pollock or Lee Krasner Pollock.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
And you know what? Lee Krasner Pollock was my great aunt. And she could, my mom and she drew a lot of her toughness from Lee Krasner. And Jackson Pollock and Lee Krasner Pollock, I bet you they never said, I can't draw a straight line. They probably said, I won't draw a straight line. And now look at the paintings.
Yeah. See, this is what's so interesting. Wow, so your mom, let's talk about your mom, Rusty. I like the name. So you got okay, you're going to be the hammer or the nail, but I'm going to be Rusty and don't mess with me. I love the name Rusty. And I want to talk about how she got that. But her start, I mean, is running around the streets of Brooklyn, apparently. And, you know, then, you know, judo comes into her life. How did that happen? And here she really stood up for women. And as you do, you continue on this legacy, not only in judo, but just for women and inequality, which I love. And Nancy and I both, we still have to let people know that women can do things. And your mom, you know, winning her first title and it being taken away, like,
yeah, that sucks.
I have to watch my language when I hear things like this.
Yeah. Jeez.
Well, you know, it's such a great story, because in Rusty's story, you can really pick out these words of empowerment and inspiration. And before she even knew how to pronounce them or spell them, she was living them. Mm. And that's how you're really true to yourself and you find your purpose, is you actually live your purpose. Mm. So with Rusty, she grew up in Coney Island in Brooklyn, New York in the 1950s. And she had such a tumultuous childhood. Her father was a gambling man. He was always drinking, very absentee, took the family money constantly. And they lived in a small railroad apartment. So Rusty's mom, my grandmother, worked in a candy factory in Coney Island.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, she, but unfortunately back then, you know, the labor laws were a lot different. So she got her hand mangled in one of the machines, and to continue working, she had to take something, I think it was called Pantopone, which was an opioid back then. And then she kept on always having pain, and she kept on taking more and more of the opioids. And that's pretty much how she sustained her life, was with through the opioids and nicotine. And Rusty's parents didn't really talk to each other. They threw things at each other. They were yelling at in Yiddish and German at each other. So the big family grounding wasn't there. So when Rusty was growing up, she had babysitters. And given that she was in Coney Island, her babysitters were actually the stars of what sadly back then they called the freak show. And her two babysitters were, the Pinhead sisters, which were these really sweet sisters, and they just had smaller heads. So they put them in a freak show and call them Pinheads.
Oh my God.
And Milo, the mule faced boy, which really was a young man who was just very, very kind and sweet. And he had, I guess, buck teeth. But they just renamed him mule faced boy and they made him sing on stage and really exploited these people, which is horrific, but that's what they did in the 50s. So these were her babysitters, and she said the Pinhead sisters and Milo showed her at a very young age that it doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter people calling you names. It's how you treat others and how they make you feel around them. And Rusty felt like family. She belonged, because Rusty was also different. She was bigger than most, outspoken more than most. And she was rough around the edges. And the big thing in Coney Island, she was the Jewish kid. Everybody else were the Catholic kids. So she was the Jewish kid. So she was the anomaly of the area anyway. Mm. So they really embraced her, but she also built her character, knowing that you just don't judge a book by its cover. Yeah. And you take people for how they treat you and how they treat others. Mm. You know, people could say, oh, I'm this and I'm that and I'm this, but Rusty said, you know what? Show it. Don't say it, show it. Mm-hmm. And she held people accountable. And that resonated throughout her life. So fast forward a little bit, she became a street gang leader of a female gang called the Apaches, because she had all this pent up energy. She got involved. She recruited these gang members, these other females, and they had these chartreuse jackets and pedal pushers, something like right out of the movie Grease, but they actually fought with other neighborhood females.
Ooh, wow.
And no weapons back then. You know, back then it was strictly fist fighting, schoolyard fist fighting. One day she was supposed to have a schoolyard fight with another group, and the other group showed up, but the rest of her gang did not show up. And Rusty took every bump and bruise that they gave her. Then, all with her face all muddied and bloodied, she went to each and every one of these girls' houses that were supposed to be in her gang and she beat the daylights out of each one.
Oh,
it was all about accountability. If you give your word, if you say you're going to do something, you do it.
Wow.
And back then there were no cell phones to text to say, hey, not making it.
Yeah, excuse me, late for the flight. No,
don't do it. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, with all of this pent up energy, Rusty started making some poor choices and ran in some bad crowds. And she got shot at. I think the bullet grazed her. She was arrested and she was put in the woman's house of detention as a young girl. But at the same time, she also had a job at Ma Bell back then. So they made excuses for her, saying that she was out on sick leave or something to hold her job until she can get out of jail.
Wow. And
she managed to get out and she said, that's it. I have to turn my life around. I can't do this. I really need to do something with my life to make something meaningful. And she thought maybe, you know, at this young age, at 18, she married her first husband. Hey, I'm not a kid anymore. I'm a woman. I'm a married woman. She got pregnant and that's it. I'm going to be a mother. That's it. This is me. Unfortunately, her first husband had a drinking problem and it was normal back then, I guess, for a lot of drinking problems in these areas, but she went to Al-Anon because she wanted to really be supportive of him. And as she was in Al-Anon, he was at the bar. So that really wasn't working out too well. But when she was in Al-Anon, she met a friend and he looked really strong, like he worked out. So she just asked him, hey, what do you do? What do you work out? Because Rusty was into fitness, into working out. Part of what she used to do is her workout, she used to lift the bus stop signs. Now, I don't know if you guys remember, but back then the bus stop signs were these concrete, they look like concrete flower pots with a stick or with a metal rod. And she would just lift these things as her exercise. So she was curious what this guy did. And he told her, well, this was back in 1955. Well, I do judo. Now at that time, she didn't know what judo was. And he said, well, you know, it's a Japanese martial art. And at that time, World War II, let's see, 1955. So this was not a good time to want to learn something, especially from Japan or from Germany, you know, and being a Jewish female, you just didn't want to go
there. Oh my gosh.
But when, he said, well, let me show you. So he picked her up on a hip throw and he lifted her like she was a piece of paper. Now she was 5'9", 200 pounds.
Wow.
And she just went flying. She said, you know what? I just forgave Japan for every misdeed. I have to learn this. And she followed him back to his YMCA where he learned judo. And he said, okay, I'll introduce you to the class. You know, he wasn't thinking there was any issue with it. Well, the judo instructor said, I'm sorry, no women are allowed. Women can't practice judo. And she persisted and she persisted. And they finally let her in the class. The deal was she would learn judo one day and they came up with a great idea. Then she would turn around and teach judo the next day to the beginners and especially to other women. So the two about this is that one, it was at a YMCA, which is the Young Men's Christian Association. And here she is, a Jewish girl in Brooklyn. Number two, when they were advertising her judo class in the local newspaper, it would learn judo with Rena Rusty Stewart at the time. And in the same on the same page, you had an ad, how to serve your husband and treat and press his pants.
Oh.
You know, just talk about the times, you know, how to be a good wife to your husband and make sure he has a hot cup of coffee when he comes home.
Oh, no. And you're going to be dressed in saran wrap when he comes home. It's getting to that era.
Yes.
So that was the 70s. It evolved.
Wait, wasn't that in Fried Green Tomatoes?
Something like that. Some crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
there was that book, the, oh gosh, is it The Joy of Sex, written by M. And she had all these really insane how you should please your husband ideas. And one was that you would greet him at the door wrapped in saran wrap with nothing else on, obviously. But like, okay.
Why?
Well, yeah, I don't know. Maybe to look like a sandwich?
I don't know.
Just because and I guess because obviously you could see, but... but you're still kind of closed and he had to unwrap you. So you didn't miss the fun of unwrapping.
I don't know. Okay. So this is what's going on. Well, this is what women have gone through. And here she is doing completely like, hello, I'm going to kick your butt.
Yeah. Well, here she was. Now she's learning judo. And in 1959, she went with her team to the YMCA championships in Utica, New York. So she went there and she brought her judo uniform, which we call a judo gi, with her so she could be part of the warm-up. They have form practice mm-hmm. and she could pretty much what you call being a body to be able to help warm them up. And as she was on the mat and she was warming up with them, she used to think, wow, wouldn't it be great if I could compete here, if women can compete as well? Because I mean, there were just no women there. And she just assumed women were not allowed. Well, she heard a scream on the other side of the mat and she looked over and unfortunately it was one of her teammates. He hurt his leg or he blew out his knee or something during warm-up. The coach called her over and said, hey, Rusty, get ready. I'm putting you in his place, but I don't want you to call attention to yourself. You have to keep it low key. So Rusty took this very seriously. She went and they didn't have any female locker room. So she went into the closet, into the janitorial closet or into a bathroom stall. And she took an ace bandage and she wrapped her chest. She wasn't, she had short hair. She was big and tall and strong, but just to make sure that it wasn't a giveaway that she was a woman, she put it around her chest and to look even more androgynous. And she got into the competition. She saw her opponent. It was this big hulking guy. He was staring her down like guys who were about to fight do. She bowed onto the mat, bowed to the referee. And she remembers the coach said, just pull a draw. And she's thinking, but I trained just like all of this, just like this guy. I trained with the other guys. I trained just like my teammate who I'm taking his place. Why should I have to just pull a draw? Because why don't I have the burden of expecting to win? It's unfair that they remove that burden from me just because I'm a woman. So as she was competing, she heard her team yelling, go Rusty. She heard in her mind's eye, go Rusty. And she just went for it. It was like a real battle, because in order to get your grip in judo, it's almost like a fist fight to grab exactly where you want to grab on the judo gi. And she got her grip and she came in for a throw. She committed herself 100% and boom, she threw this guy for a full point, smashed him. Well, they got up, they bowed out, and her team was just so excited because now her team won first place.
Wow.
Not only did she win, but her team now, that was the decision to give her team that needed point to win first place. They all got their medals. They got the team trophy. And then the tournament director called her aside and he asked for a word. And I remember her telling me, and it's really highlighted in the book, that she said, wow, well, first of all, I can't believe I got a medal instead of a citation for fighting. That's number one. I didn't have to go to jail for fighting. This is great. The next thing is she thought, when this guy said, hey, let me have a word, maybe he's going to compliment me on my technique, or he's going to say, hey, well done. But then when somebody says they want to talk to you, the first thing that our minds go to again is the negativity is, oh boy.
Yeah.
So he didn't mince his words. He just looked at her and he was so accusatory. And he goes, are you a girl? Like she did something wrong. And at that time she felt like she did everything wrong just for being a woman. And she just held her head high and said, no, I'm a woman.
Right on.
And he said, well, I'm going to need that medal back because your team's otherwise going to have to forfeit because women are not allowed to compete here. You're not allowed. And she talked to her coach and her teammates and they said, no, Rusty, you don't give that. You don't give that back. But she decided, you know what? No, I have the respect of my teammates and they earned this. There's no reason why they should be punished because they're not the woman. So she hands the medal back to this guy. And she was thinking in her mind, like, she wanted to cry so bad, but she's like, this guy doesn't even deserve my emotion. And she handed that medal back. And that was the pivotal moment in her life where she said, no woman will ever suffer such an indignity ever again, not on my watch, not in my world. I have to do something. What that something is, I don't know, but I'm going to change this. This is never going to happen again. She gave the medal back, and in 1959 was the pivotal moment of her life. And everybody, every woman now that puts on a judo gi that says, I want to be an Olympian, I want to be a world champion, can only say that because of Rusty and that moment.
That's awesome. So
thank you. And from there, this is where the flourishing happened. Rusty found her purpose, although it was there all along. And in that purpose was a lot of other good stuff. So she decided women's judo needs to be in the nationals. There was no national tournament for women. And furthermore, women, judo in general was not even heard of in the Olympics yet. 1964 was the first time men's judo was allowed into the Olympics. And that was in Japan, in Tokyo. She wanted at least women to start competing. And so she was teaching more women, and she found a woman here, found a woman there. And in 1974, she got a team together to go compete in the nationals. The first time women were allowed in the nationals. But that was the beginning to the end, and the end to the beginning. She was supposed to fight in one weight category, but her very best friend Maureen was also in that weight category. So Rusty decided, I'm going to go down a division and lose 12 pounds overnight. She put on a sauna suit, did everything she could in the sauna, jumped up and down, got on the scale. She made the weight and then landed in the hospital for dehydration. So that was the end of that. But now Rusty said, this is what I have to do. She was the coach of the US team. They started putting together a team to go and compete overseas at the British Open, the French Open, the German Open. The Europeans were way ahead of us in having all of these international opens. Rusty was telling USA Judo at the time, hey, I want to, you know, we should compete internationally in women's judo. And at the time, USA Judo was run by a bunch of misogynists, a bunch of good old boys saying, oh, hell no, we're not going to have any women competing. Oh, no, women shouldn't be competing. They even told her at one point, well, you know, your reproductive parts might get hurt. And she said, well, then men should quit judo because our parts are on the inside. Yours are not.
No. Hello. Well, I just actually want to touch on this, on the men female thing, because judo, and you think about martial arts, who started it? Was it a man who created judo, who came up with the practice and the art of judo? And or, you know, in Japan, were women allowed in that? Because that's a whole other thing, too. Was it just really here, our country, in the beginning? Or was this something globally that had to, I mean, maybe Europe was ahead, but when you think about martial arts, I always think it was always men and women, not so much. So where were we on that, historically speaking, in the art of judo?
I love that you asked that, because I actually missed a slight time frame, something extremely important. And had it not been for this trip to Japan, I wouldn't even exist. So after Rusty, after the 1959 tournament, you see, judo was, the father of judo was Professor Jigoro Kano, a Japanese man. But in his writings, if you really read them carefully, he never excluded women. He included everyone. It wasn't explicit the way in his writings, but he never said, no, this is for men only. So Rusty got to go to Japan. She went and she trained in Japan, which in 1962 was, again, unheard of. A woman getting on a flight, a single mom at the time, getting on a flight, going to Japan. She didn't speak the language, hardly had any money. They raised some money, and a friend of a friend let her borrow his friends and family plane pass. I mean, back then it was so different. She goes to Japan and she goes to train at the Kodokan. And that is like the mecca, the main place for judo. they had the men's side and they had the women's side. So the women's side, all the women were doing kata, which is form practice of judo. So it was non-combative and it was really getting the form down to a science. And Rusty learned a lot from these women. She became friends with Sensei Keiko Fukuda, who was the mother of kata. She was just amazing. And all of these women that she trained with, but Rusty was hungry for more. Rusty wanted to fight. She wanted the combative side of it. So again, just like she did at the YMCA, she went and to the men's side and kept asking. Finally, one of the senior men said, okay, let her in. Well, she embodied the term, the Japanese mantra, fall down 7, get up 8, because that's all she did. They included her. They treated her like one of the guys. And they kept on throwing her and she would get in a couple of throws here and there. She would just keep getting up. She would not stop. And it's interesting because she made some really good friends. And one friend used to watch her from behind the curtain. He was scared of her. He admitted, he's like, I was scared of her. I didn't know what to think. Who was this gigantic New York woman? And he went home and his father said, hey, did you see that woman on television at the Kodokan, the American? And he said, oh yeah, she's my friend. He said, well, you have to marry her. She's going to give you big babies. So my father ended up marrying her.
Well, there you
and
go.
Here's the big baby right
here. You go, girl. So this is this whole full circle moment of just going for it. And it's kind of like almost like blind passion where your body just keeps making you go forward. It's interesting about that because I think that she had that chutzpah, right, of not letting anybody say no. And I think, you know, that's something important in life now. And women still, we are still fighting for our rights. Yeah. We're fighting for all. Yeah.
Probably will.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think this is all, I don't want to get religious. I think it stems from the Bible.
Uh-oh, we're going to get into
Seriously, because we weren't like our own person. We had to be made from somebody else's rib.
It's mankind.
So therefore, if it wasn't for men, we wouldn't be here. And I keep thinking logically, if it wasn't for women, nobody would be here. So, I mean, it takes both.
It does. It takes both. Yeah. And, you know, with Rusty, believe it or not, it was not just women that supported her. Mm-hmm. Men got on board with her. Men believed in her. Matter of fact, so we fast forward and she wanted women's judo to be in the Olympics. How do we do this? How do we figure this out? So they just, the U.S. judo told her, well, Rusty, you want to have women's judo considered as an Olympic sport? Well, we need a world championships. And we need, and in order to have a world championships, you have to have 125 people from X amount of countries. And okay, so go ahead. Mm-hmm. It was like a schoolyard fight. Like, yeah, you want this? Well, go ahead. Go away, little girl. Figure it out. She goes, you know what? We will have a world championships. He goes, and then I remember him, the conversation. He said, oh yeah, well, where? And of course, Rusty said, well, Madison Square Garden in New York. Just like that. And after she said those words, you know, she's a woman of conviction. And also she didn't want to say, well, I was kidding. No. She said, that's it. So she came to our judo class that night and she said, well, guys, I have an announcement. We're holding a world championships at Madison Square Garden. Needless to say, my father just dropped whatever was in his hand. And one of our senior students said, well, Rusty, how are you going to do that? I think there's like $140 in the bank. That was it. She was determined. And not only was she determined, but she got donations. One of the bigger sponsors was Sassone Jeans. Paul Gez was one of the sponsors. And a man who had no idea about judo. Sassone had nothing to do with judo, but she got him involved. Another person that was so helpful was back then Percy Sutton. He was with the Harlem Boys Choir. And he was helpful. So the majority of people that jumped in to help were men. Pony Sports. Pony Sports is one of their executives helped, as well as one of, he assigned one of his staff to full-time help with this world championship.
Wow.
So people had no idea why they were helping, but they knew that something was moving in the right direction and they had to help. They felt compelled because it was such a force. And as Rusty was moving forward, Dr. Matsumae, at the time, he was the new president of the International Judo Federation. Now, Rusty was thinking, oh no, the Japanese mindset, they're going to be against women competing. Mm-hmm. Well, boy, was she wrong. Dr. Matsumae was even sort of a feminist, and he was an educator. He believed that equality should happen all across the board. Mm-hmm. And he came through with helping with the funding in the 11th hour to keep the doors open of Madison Square Garden and help Rusty, because he not only believed in women's judo and sports and equality, he believed in Rusty.
Mm. So I just want to say this is such a huge thing for back then too, because like now we have like, oh, let's throw a concert to make this happen. We're going to make that happen. And we can do it from a touch of the keyboard. Obviously you're writing an email and you can affect through social media. Back then, this is pre-Google, pre-email. This is, you know, even pre-fax machine, right? Or it was fax, I don't know.
Telex.
Oh yeah, see, this is really, you've got to think this was just not that easy back then. And I want to touch on the Olympics, that importance, because we've done the interview, Nancy, about Cupertine, but the Olympics, even keeping the Olympics going been a strife. You know, Cupertine wanted it and then they took it away. And he was like, he envisioned the Olympics as world peace. And if you read the history of the Olympics, it's pretty darn amazing. So your mom fits right in there going, this is part of it, you know, inclusivity.
She does. And, you know, so after this world championships, then she said, okay, well, here we are. Let's get into the 84 Olympics. Well, they said, well, you need another world championships and more international tournaments. She teamed up with Dr. Matsumae, and she, Dr. Matsumae held the first Fukuoka championships in 1983 in Japan. So the Japanese women can compete internationally on their home turf. And this is a tournament that everybody's still talking about because we felt like superstars. I actually competed in that one. I made the US team and I competed at the first Fukuoka, and it was amazing. The kids would come up and ask us for our autographs. It was just absolutely incredible. In 1982 in Paris, there was another world championships. She felt with all of this, that's it. We're in 1984. It's in Los Angeles. Well, they told her no. That was not happening. No was not part of Rusty's vocabulary. At the same time Rusty was fighting and battling for equality in women's judo, she teamed up with Billie Jean King and the Women's Sports Foundation and fought for Title IX. So she's part of that Title IX fight and Title IX movement. Well, Rusty was told no. She teamed up with the American Civil Liberties Union and decided to sue the International Olympic Committee for discrimination.
Yeah.
He wanted to put an injunction on the entire games in 1984.
Wow.
She was, you know, she was, they
see,
used to
Cupertine wouldn't want all this stuff to have had to have happened, you know, historically, when you think about what they started and now what you're saying, this is like insane. Like it needs to happen, but like, that was not the original vision. I don't believe, I could be wrong.
Well, Rusty wanted that. She wanted the inclusion.
Yeah.
She said, you know, women deserve it. They train their guts out. They absolutely deserve it. So she got these petitions signed from everybody all over the world to support her lawsuit and her possible injunction on the entire Olympics. Fast forward, she knew that she still had work to do. Okay, 84, it wasn't happening. And then in 1988, she was still told no. Finally, with every lawsuit and the help of the ACLU and all of the force and the pressure, the men had to give up one weight category to have three weight divisions for women. And in 1988, Rusty marched into the stadium as the US coach and was the Olympic coach with her three-person team. That marched in, and that was her gold medal. Women's judo was now an exhibition inclusion in 1988. And in 1992 in Barcelona, it was completely fully included. And what's really cool about this year's Olympics is judo is returning home to the motherland. Mm. And because of the mother of women's judo, this is the first time ever they will have a mixed team tournament, equal men, equal women.
Wow.
How cool is that?
That's
judo
cool.
The motherland, and because of the mother of women's judo, this has happened.
This is so cool. Now, are you going to compete? Where are you in competing?
I'm retired. I was one of the heavyweight fighters on the U.S. judo team. I blew out my knee right before 88. So that killed, you know, it was so bittersweet because I was so happy women's judo was included. That was my dream. I was going to win that gold medal in 88. Mm. And then I ended up having a gold medal surgery instead.
Yeah.
I blew it out at the Pan Americans. So that killed my Olympic dream, but my mother had her Olympic dream.
Right? Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, I know, and you know, writing the book together, was it something, I know she's passed on now and sorry about that, but she's alive in so many women, right? And around the world through this and through what you're doing. Was she writing the memoir, or did you write it together, or did you take her notes? And I mean, because I know she's co-author, and Billie Jean King is, you know, in the introductions as well. So how did this all come together doing this memoir? Because I know it's been in the works.
Well, in 2004, 2005, Rusty was shopping around. She wanted to get her story published. And she was working with different writers. Every writer she worked with, she would get frustrated because they couldn't capture her voice. She said, this story has to be told in my voice. So then she would get so frustrated because in one, you know, when somebody says, what's a Michigana? Rusty would say, oh, if you don't know what a Michigana is, out, next.
Yeah.
So somebody who can capture her voice and still write the story and understand the judo and the nuances, but make it palatable for the non-judo person, because it is more than that. It's a love story and it's perseverance. So she started writing her own memoir. And we would sit and write it together. She'd like, okay, what are you doing? I said, well, I was about to. Good, come over. And that's how the conversation was. I said, but I'm at work. Okay, good. After work, I'll see you. What time are you going to be here?
Yeah.
And that's how it would be. So I'd go over the house after work and we would sit pen to paper, or she would type out a chapter in the day. And then I'd go through it and either redline and fix it and say, okay, this is better. And we would do that for every single bit. And then I would, and we had this deal. I'm like, okay, the statute of limitations has expired for everything. So, but make sure, because mom, I'm in law enforcement. Okay.
Yeah,
you got to keep that in mind. So, well, she said, well, prepare yourself, because you're going to learn a few things about me. She boosted cars when she was younger. Her and her mom to raise money, her mom would throw her in front of a car.
Oh God, not the insurance thing, the insurance scams.
Well, it wasn't the insurance scam. It was more like they hit the brakes and Rusty would look so frazzled because she wouldn't, it would be a slow moving vehicle. So she kind of just push her. And now keep in mind the time, the era, 1950. So the era, okay. So the Studebaker would drive very, very slowly. Rusty would like just jump out in front and the guy would hit his brakes. And then he'd say, oh, you poor thing. Can I buy you an ice cream? Would that make you less shaken? And she'd say, sure. And that would be it. So it was very more, a lot more innocent than, you know, the nefarious, what we think where our minds go today. So
yeah, just keep our life has changed. I know you're in law enforcement as special agent. Nancy, I was going, we've got a secret agent. She goes, no, she's got the specials. It's a saying with us. It's the specials. We do a lot of, you know, as we travel the country, we do a lot of pet sitting, and some dogs and some cats, they require the specials to get them to eat. It's the specials. But being a special agent, and from your background in judo and also your mom, being an investigator, doesn't all of that help you do, I mean, you've done some amazing cases, 9/11. Doesn't that help you with your focus and then persistence, you know, in pursuit of getting the story?
Well, it does. As far as, you know, what I try to do is I'm very fair. I really want to gather the facts. You know, we have this joke, you know, just the facts, ma'am.
Right.
But I want to know the facts.
Web.
I want to know the truths. And even if it's your version of the truths, I want you to talk to me. You know, I don't believe in confirmation bias. Oh, go get him to confess because, you know, we think he's good for this. No, I don't believe in that. I believe in developing rapport. I believe in talking to people. And I really believe sometimes there are just good people that make poor choices. And then sometimes there are just people that are inherently bad. And my job is not to judge you. My job is to gather the facts and let the prosecutor do what they want to do with it. That's my job is really to get a neat little package and protect the public. That's what I've sworn to do. I've sworn I have a duty to protect the public. So part of my job is I do arrest warrants and search warrants and serve subpoenas and do interviews, interrogations. And I love talking to people, depending on what I'm doing. But you know what? The judo has really allowed me to be comfortable with use of force. I feel very comfortable hands-on. So it doesn't have to, if possible, escalate to a deadly force situation. My judo training has allowed me to stay focused on what I'm doing, not get distracted, but also really take things in so that I can apply my skills with the least amount of force necessary for the action that I'm about to do. Now, granted, if it's full on, all on, then it is what it is. But if it doesn't have to be, if I'm just going to go hands on and I can subdue somebody before it escalates, well, that's great contribution from my training, as well as understanding that from my psychological background and, you know, having a PhD in psychology is really just a lot of fun because you have to, you know, it helps you understand and you don't need a PhD in psychology, but knowing about people and their behavior, knowing about resilience, knowing sometimes when people are yelling at you, they're not yelling at you. They're just yelling, you know, they're just yelling or they're off gassing, like we would say in scuba diving. So taking that not taking that to heart can really help with how you deal with people, how you deal with public. And granted, yes, a lot of things are changing. Some things are changing for the better. Some things are not changing for the better. You know, but change is slow. You know, the wheels of justice turn very slow. But being having a judo background and having Rusty as my mom was so impactful in my career. And also there are some funny moments where I would have somebody in custody and I would say, hey, listen, I'm about to interview somebody. But anytime she called me, I'd answer the phone because it's my mom and that's what I would do. And she would tell me, well, make sure you ask him this. And I'm like, Mom, I got this. Or she'll call me and ask, what are you doing? Well, I'm on surveillance. Well, it's cold out. Are you wearing your vest? Yes.
This sounds very familiar.
Are you wearing a sweater? Yes. Well, don't let the bad guys see you. Well, if I stay on the phone, maybe it's a good idea if I get off the phone. Or when we were writing the book, she would write a part of the chapter and send it to me and then call me as soon as she hit the send button and ask me, hey, did you read my email?
Yeah.
Yes, this sounds familiar. And now you also call her Rusty, you know, like I call Nancy Nancy, and I did it since I was a young kid because when she had her magazine in South Africa, you couldn't just pick up the phone when someone called in and go, hey, Ma, there's a call for you. It's Coca-Cola wanting to know about their ad. That didn't work, you know.
Well,
and it's so how did it come for you to call her Rusty?
I only started calling her Rusty for when we started this project. I only referred to her as Rusty when we were international or somebody would say, hey, somebody, you know, who's the coach? And I would say Rusty, not my mom.
Yeah.
But it was so funny. Rusty would always, we'd always call Rusty mom or the mother. Not only was she the mother of women's judo, she was everybody's mother, but sometimes she was just straight up the mother.
Awesome. See, that's it. I know you don't mess with the mothership. You know, that's what we say, the mothership. But it's, you know, I think that's a very interesting thing because having that mother daughter bond, you know, they always talk the mom and the daughter and the father and then the mom and the son. But it is a very interesting relationship and it's empowering when you connect on it with that kind of level. And I think all moms and daughters need to have that because every mom does something. Yours is in judo, my mom's in magazine land, you know, and all kinds of other things. But there's every mom has their quality and every daughter has, and if they can unite, it's going to be a better world and more and powerful. And we have to, as women, empower each other, whether or not it's a biological mom, some are grandmas, well, or, you know,
think, Lisa, how many times people have asked how it is that we manage to work with each other together, and for this, the amount of years that we have done that. And they're like, oh, you know, they all love their daughters, but they're like, I can't even think of working with my daughter. And the daughters would say the same thing. They love their mothers, but there's no way they're working together. You know, because that it seems like an impossible thing to most women, which is really unfortunate. But it isn't that easy, I just have to say.
I'm sure I gave my mom a hard time.
I'm sure she did.
I'm sure I was a
pain. But you could choke each other out.
Apparently. I know. Well, I have to tell you the one story where, you know, we talk about mindfulness and on the mat. Well, my mom was teaching at the same time, but she was training me. So there's one part where she's anchored down by two grown men, and I am to attack her with a judo throw at full speed and full power. Well, she turned her head to direct another student to do something. So she wasn't being very mindful. So because she wasn't being very mindful, and the two guys anchoring her were not being mindful because they thought that we were taking a break, the only one who didn't think we were taking a break was me. I came in full speed, full attack at our judo school on a throw called Oso Dogari, which is a rear reaping leg technique. So you sweep the leg out and they fall backwards. Not only did I do that to poor Rusty, oh my goodness, I hit her so hard, we went through the wall of our judo school. So the two of us are laying there with plaster all over us. My father's on the other side of the mat. The judo students were terrified. They did not know what to do. Oh, Rusty and I just sat there looking at each other. Of course, probably the little birdie going over our head, laughing. Catch our breath. My father walks over, this sweet Japanese man, and says, oh, now I must fix wall, and walks away. The students still didn't know what to do. So of course, my mother's like, you morons, help us up. We were stuck in the wall.
That's funny. That's funny. That is
that
funny.
Really, it's funny.
I love it. I love that, you know, and also I want to tell everyone the website, right, to go to, because this isn't just a website. Go to Rusty Kanokogi, and it's Kanokogi. Go there, because this is a project which I love. So it's the Rusty Project. So this is something that is, you're not just, here's the book. This is something that you're just continuing the movement for women, from what I'm getting.
It is. Yes. And this is going to be through speaking, through the stories that I use. You know, storytelling is historic as far as transferring messages. And I believe it was different cultures use storytelling to convey messages. And with Rusty's book and Rusty telling the story in her voice, it gives stories of empowerment and get up and fight. Now, behind me, you see, it says, in life, either you are the hammer or the nail. Be the hammer. But here's the thing. What is the hammer? The hammer is not a bully. The hammer is something that's fluid, something that keeps moving, something that is strong, something that has direction. The nail just stands there and gets hit on the head. So what do you want to do? Do you want to stand there and get hit on the head, or do you want to be the hammer to build something? Because granted, you need the nail to hold it together, but you need the hammer to make it happen. So that's where that comes from. And also, get up and fight does not mean go outside and pick a fight with somebody.
Right.
Your get up and fight is personal. Get up and fight is maybe getting up and getting out of bed that day. Maybe deciding to go on further that day. Maybe your get up and fight is as small as waking up and getting out of bed. I mean, that everybody has their different get up and fight. One of the things I volunteer as the director of mental health and peer support for Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, what I do is I help people with their get up and fight, other federal agents, current and retired. So part of Project Rusty is reaching out and helping people find their get up and fight. Their get up and fight is through Rusty's diversity and inclusion. My judo school was in Flatbush Avenue in Brooklyn, in one of the roughest parts. So I grew up on the mat with my brothers and sisters from Haiti, from Jamaica, from rich kids, poor kids. It didn't matter. We were on the mat. We were all one. So it did not matter. So before even diversity and inclusion were a narrative, this was my life. This is what I lived. This is what I continue to live. And this is part of this empowerment, because I want everybody to know that you can be anybody. You can be a poor kid from Brooklyn and change the world like Rusty did.
And absolutely.
With not a penny this in her pocket.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. What a great story and something to continue to live by. It's a living story. And I love that you're moving it forward and keeping people inspired to kick some butt and be the hammer. Now, before you go, I know you've got a Facebook, right? You've got social media going on in Facebook. So I was on there today and I'm like, who is that cute little puppy? Who's that puppy?
Well, if you go on our website, you'll see he's part of our team. That's Eddie. We adopted him from the Monmouth County SPCA. And I mentioned that because they're going to be getting the proceeds to our upcoming June 5th global release launch. So we're going to make a donation to the SPCA where we adopted Eddie.
Cool.
Little crazy Eddie. He makes sure that I get a few miles of a walk in a day. Otherwise, I have to buy him a hamster wheel, a treadmill. But he's the sweetest thing ever.
Awesome. I love that you rescued a pup. It's so important that we take care of pups. And I know during COVID, a lot of people rescued animals and I'm like, please stay with them. Don't do the, like, I want to return my child.
You
can't do that. Unless it's not a good situation, everything is different. But thank you so much for joining us and for continuing Rusty's story out there. It's been a true pleasure.
It really has been a pleasure, especially to meet both of you, Lisa and Nancy, and spend this time together. Thank you.
Thank you. Here's to moms and daughters, man. May we all rock on.
That's it.